Blog Talk Radio.
Well, it looks like this is going to be another one of those evenings where the music does not cooperate with me. When you try everything out ahead of time, it seems to be going just great, and then suddenly, when the show goes on, not so much. Murphy's Law rules once again. We'll dispense with the music. Welcome to Open Rebellion Radio's The Voice of Reason with Michael Murphy. This is Monday evening. This is not our normal time, and actually I am not on live. We're doing this as a podcast. Had some issues today. Our internet was down. It was getting a little bit marginal this evening. I knew I couldn't count on it. So actually I drove about 10 miles away to a friend's house, and I'm sitting here in his kitchen where I have a good secure internet connection. And so we should be able to be with each other here uninterrupted without any problem. Once again, a reminder that the Voice of Reason is every Monday at 7 o'clock Central Time on normal Mondays. This was not a normal Monday. And a reminder also that on Tuesday and Thursday at 6 p.m. Central, we have host Danielle, Dina, and Richard, who bring us debates and news and interesting guests. And, of course, Wednesday we have Cindy's Corner. And Cindy has a little bit different look at things in relation to fashion and lifestyle, things like that. Once again, the website is madisoncpc.com. We invite you to go there every day and take a look at our at the articles and news that's there. We invite you to certainly go there every day and go there multiple times a day. Why not? It's good for you and it's good for us. As is customary, we're going to look at some of the news of the day and the past few days. Some of the articles that are. On Madison's. We're going to look at that for a few minutes. Tonight I have a very special guest. We're going to be talking about the Yazidi population in Iraq and around the world. If you followed me very much, you know it's one of the things I've been have had an interest in. Written several articles on it. We broke some news on it here a few weeks ago. And we think you'll enjoy hearing firsthand kind of what's going on with some of these people and some of the experiences that they've had. So as we look at some of the news of the day, SCOTUS says no to a review of Obama on immigration order, the NCAA, and Scott Walker investigation. Invite you to go in there and look at the details of that. But essentially, when SCOTUS says they will not review something, then the lower court ruling stands. And so in relation to Obama's immigration order, the lower court had said that he had overstepped his bounds and he could not do that. And so the Supreme Court is allowing that to stand. The NCAA was in relation to paying athletes and all. And the Scott Walker investigation, interesting. There was a lot of people going after Scott Walker over the years. And Scott Walker hadn't done anything wrong, but they didn't like Scott Walker, and so they did what progressives do, and they went after him in the court. Excuse me. And every court that reviewed it always came with the same answer: Scott Walker has done nothing wrong. And the last court said that, and SCOTUS has said we're not going to look at it. And so hopefully that's an end to that, and he can go on governing and go on with his life. Yo, pot-smoking hippie dudes, your habit causes gun violence. I think that's probably tongue-in-cheek, but go in there and read that and check that out. Here's an interesting one, introducing young Madison. This is something that is kind of close to my heart, as you know, if you've followed me very much, that educating not only each other and educating adults, but educating our young people who are woefully uneducated in relation to our Constitution, our form of government, things like that. Madison is going to be working on a program to help teaching young patriots so that we can be moving forward with them. And I'm going to check in here. My guest is on hold, and I'm going to let her know that I know that she's on hold, and I'm going to talk for a few more minutes, then I'm going to bring her on. The utopian goal of equality. This is an article I wrote some time back, but there's been some interest in it, and so we're bringing it back in. That's the part one. It's taking a look at the early progressives, the early communists and socialists who came in and decided that they didn't like the way things were going, and that maybe there should be some central planning and that sort of thing. A lot of people just aren't capable of running their own lives, and so we need to set up somebody who can run it for them. So anyway, that's a look at that, and it's part one. And Yazidi people have won a huge battle. This was an article that I told you where we broke some news recently, and we'll be talking about that tonight. This day in history is always a popular article. I like to share that on my Facebook page, and people always we get a lot of comments and a lot of likes on that. Got a hurricane down in the islands down. It's set to hit Haiti and Jamaica. It's a pretty strong one. I think it was Category 4 last I noticed, and so that's going to be a lot of damage to those people. So keep them in your thoughts and prayers. Is your bank robbing you? Don't be a victim. Get out of there fast. And just an idea of just kind of pick up some ideas about how the banks kind of pull some stuff over on us and get away with some things. A SCOTUS run amok is another article on there that is quite interesting. Scariest Screams and Haunts Part 2. A 6-year-old gunshot victim dies of wounds. There's one here, an Ohio Muslim immigrant kills his own daughter. It looks like one of those honor killings. Just a disgusting way to live your life. So anyway, let's take a short break here. And if the studio here will work with me, and we'll play things the way they're supposed to, and then I'll come back with our guest. Stand by.
So, you're still using the hotel website with the gentleman that played Captain Kirk and Denny Crane, or the goon with the beard in the strange uniform, or the talking lawn gnome to book hotels, car rentals, bed and breakfasts, or cruises. Are you kidding me? Let me let you in on something. You're not really saving money with those. Those are the new retail. Why pay retail when you can book your travel accommodations and pay wholesale? In fact, up to 75% off of standard pricing. Snazzy Traveler is the travel equivalent of the big box wholesale members clubs. But you don't have to go and look for a parking space and wait in line to check out. You can save hundreds, even thousands of dollars on travel. And best of all, it's like having the services of concierge for just 27 cents a day. I'm serious. Snazzy Traveler has all the hotels and B&Bs you're looking for, and more besides. They have all the top car rental companies and cruise ships and tours. But if you want to save big money and get great service, there's only one way you can get the deals I'm talking about. Go to our website, MadisonCPC.com, MadisonCPC.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, and click on the Snazzy Traveler banner ad and get signed up. You'll soon discover why Inc. 500 rates Snazzy Traveler America's fastest growing travel website. Be smart. Be snazzy. Don't pay retail. Snazzy Traveler.
Okay, and after that little commercial break, we are back. I have Susie on with me. Susie, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Hi.
Very good. How's it going tonight?
Pretty good. How are you?
It's been a long day, an interesting day, and things have not gone well. Murphy's Law has ruled my day, so.
So you're the one.
I'm the one. Yeah, it's all my fault. Absolutely. So I invited Susie to join us this evening because like I said, we've written some articles and done some coverage of the Yazidi, And Susie's actually the one to blame. The one to blame is not the right word. The one to credit. How about that? The one to credit with opening my eyes to the Yazidi. I was like a lot of people, and I had heard of the Yazidi. I had heard of them referred to as the Christians, and in other words, they were not Muslims or Christians. And I really, did not know much about them until she, as a Facebook friend, kind of reached out to me, and I got to looking into it and learned a little bit more about them, a little bit more about their religion and what they've gone through. And anyway, so Susie, tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of how you got started with this.
Well, about 2 years ago, take it back a little further. I've been posting news on Facebook for over 6 years. And I have 8 social media sites with over 50,000 friends. And I received a request to be a friend on Facebook about 2 years ago from a man who was in Baghdad. And I asked a few of my friends who were in the military if that was something that they thought I should do. And everyone told me to run like heck. And but something told me not to. Something told me not to. And I accepted the man. And he turned out to be the Yazidi advisor to the Iraqi government for the Yazidi people. And so from that relationship, he was writing to me while the genocide was going on. And
in 2014.
What had happened, yes, on August 3rd, 2014, ISIS came to their city of Shingal. One thing I've learned is everything has two names. Shingal is the Yazidi term, and Sinjar is the Arab term.
Right.
So they're trying to change. It's always been called Shingal, but Saddam, my mother always said Saddam Hussein, so I know that's not it. Saddam Hussein, he decided to change the name of their mountain. So he changed the name of their mountain to Sinjar. And that is basically what you've seen in the news is Sinjar.
Right.
But again, the Yazidi, and even the Yazidi name, their name is Yazidi, like E-E-Z-I-D-I.
Right.
The Arabs call them Yazidi because about 100 years ago there was a mullah who decided, whose name was Yaz, Y-A-Z, and he decided that they should be named after him. So he changed their name again. So they're trying to keep their identity and their Yazidi from Shingal. And so during the genocide, it was the 74th genocide against these people over the last 700 years or so. That whole area, the Nineveh Plains in Iraq, were at one time all Christian. And the Islam moved in and started changing that. Either you convert or you die. And everyone that has converted, or most of the people, are now Kurds. They are what used to be Yazidi. Maybe their fathers, their grandfathers, their ancient relatives were at one time Yazidi. And they were forced to convert to Islam. And now they're trying to eliminate everything prior to Muhammad. So anything prior to 14,000 years ago is to get be abolished, which includes the Yazidi people. It includes the Christ. It includes Christianity. I mean, it includes everything. So it's fascinating. I had no idea who these people were until, number one, I heard about the genocide. And my good friend Elias reached out to me on Facebook, and he basically helped me to fall in love with these people. And he would write to me and tell me how sick to his stomach he was, and he didn't know what he was going to do, that the women were throwing their children off the mountaintops because if ISIS got them, they would lose their souls. And, I mean, just horrible, horrible. They've found 70, I think it was 72 or 74 mass graves so far where they marched the Yazidi. ISIS came into let me go back to the attack. Okay, the attack on August, there's just so much, I'm telling you.
Right, I know.
Okay, the attack. On August 3rd of 2014, the Kurds had been basically protecting the Yazidis. And prior to August 3rd, I'm thinking like a day before, all of a sudden the Kurds, under the under Barzani, who is the Kurdish president, the Democrat president, he pulled his troops out of Shingal, and blocked the roads so the Yazidis couldn't even leave, and ISIS came in. So from that, I believe that Barzani, who like I say, is the Kurdish Democrat Islamic president of Iraq. He is originally from Iran. He is a Kurd. And so at one time he was a Yazidi, is the way that works.
Right.
And he now is hell-bent, if you will, on totally wiping the Yazidis off the map, off the world, out of the world.
Right.
He just prior to ISIS attacking on August 3rd, 2014, there was some militias that had weapons, and they were told to hand in their weapons. So when ISIS came into town to attack, not only were
they defenseless,
they were defenseless. They couldn't get out of town. They had no way to protect themselves. They had nothing. So 4,000 were murdered. Many of them were told to get into these like ditches, and a lot of them were buried alive. A lot of them were shot and killed. 4,000 on August 3rd, 2014, 4,000 Yazidis were killed. Not only were 4,000 killed, but another 5,000 were, I don't know if you want to say stolen, kidnapped, abducted. There's so many different words, but they were taken from their loved ones. 5,000 women, young girls, and young boys. The young boys, if the boys had pubic hair, they were shot and killed. If they didn't have pubic hair, they were taken along with the young girls and the women, and the young boys now are being trained to be young jihadis and basically kill their own people. The women and the girls, of course, are being used for sex slaves. I've seen them being sold in London. I've seen them being sold in Saudi Arabia. I've seen them being sold on the streets of a lot of nations. And sometimes they're being sold for $100, $200. Sometimes they're being sold for 25 cents. It depends on where and who's doing it. But these were all people that were taken from their loved ones. And to this day, it's been over 2 years, and no one, not any large country, not the United Nations, no one has helped these people. The people are under that are still there are under Barzani's thumb. There's over 400,000 of them in camps. They were run from their homes. Once they ran, many of them took refuge up on the mountain, and ISIS didn't know where to find them because they weren't that familiar with the mountain. So basically, the mountain saved their lives.
But there was I remember there's no water or anything up there, and so they were up there with no food, no water, and so it was a very, very terrible time.
And now, to this day, there's still 10,000 up there on the mountain, afraid to come out of the down from the mountain, afraid to leave their land, afraid, and nowhere to go, and no food or no water, no anything, unless they raise the Islamic flag, and then
right.
Barzani will give them maybe some bread and water.
Yeah.
But the children, there's thousands of children that have no shoes, winter's coming on, they have nothing. They're not even dirt poor. They don't even have the dirt. They have been, everything has been taken away from these people. And their only thing that they've done wrong is believe in God.
Right.
And not
and not Allah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a situation for, you know, a lot of people. I know, you know, and you and I were included in this at one time. I looked over there like that and I thought, well, okay, you've got the Kurds and technically the Kurds and the Yazidis are the same genetically and all like that. And so we're just sort of told, you know, that, well, the Kurds are being given arms by, you know, the U.S. is sending arms over there and they're being taken care of. And we don't understand the dynamics of it. And like you said, there's this agreement, whether it's in writing or not, it's hard to say, but there's, it seems to be some sort of agreement between Barzani and ISIS. And so things are, you know, in other words, kind of like we'll leave you alone, let you do what you want, and you leave us alone, and maybe you'll do some dirty work for us, kind of a thing.
But also, Barzani has an agreement with ISIS that Barzani will get Kirkuk, and
okay, yep.
ISIS can have Mosul.
Right.
So they're dividing up the spoils of war. In fact,
right.
a lot of the belongings that belonged to the Yazidi when they had to flee their city or village or town, I'm not sure what you'd call it, but when they had to flee, they could only take what was on their backs.
Sure.
And they left everything in their homes. And the Kurds came in and stole everything, their washers, their dryers, all their belongings. And it was divided up 70-30. 70% goes to the Kurds and 30% goes to ISIS. So they're dividing the spoils of war between the
right.
two. And Obama actually just gave Barzani another $2 billion. And I'm saying another $2 billion,
right.
and that's with a B.
Right.
Where's that money going? That's our tax-paying dollars. Where's that money going?
Yep.
It's not going to the Yazidi. It's not
no.
going – and when I say Yazidi, I'm talking about not only the Yazidi, but also the Christians, the Jews, the Armenians, and there's a couple
right.
of other minorities that go in there. And they all get along together. They love
right.
each other. They're great people, except for Islam.
Well, during the Armenian genocide back in the turn of the century, turn of the 20th century, the Yazidi were very instrumental in helping to save the Armenians who escaped. And so they're just good people.
And
they're not afraid to fight. They're not afraid to defend themselves, but they're not an aggressive people. And and like you said, it's interesting. I got a call today. I wish I could have understood and heard better from a young man who was near the Syrian Iraq border. And like I said, my internet was messed up this today, and this morning it was working a little, and I was able to I answered the call. But I was not able to really understand much of what he told me. Not, you know, partially, you know, his English is, of course, his English is much better than my whatever his native language is.
they actually speak. It's called Kurmanji. It's
right,
Kurmanji.
Okay. Right. Well, anyway, his English, you know, I could understand him when I could hear him, but the connection was so bad, I was getting, you know, chopped off words, and he said. And I did catch that he was near the Syrian-Iraq border, and that he was talking about Daesh, which is their term word for ISIS, and Russia. Yeah. And I really wish I knew what he was trying to tell me. Anyway,
can you try calling him back?
Well, I'll have to like tomorrow or something. My internet was down all day, you know, so I couldn't.
Oh.
But I'm not home right now. I had to go to another location to do my show.
Oh no!
Yeah.
Oh no!
Yeah, technology is a wonderful thing. Oh, just 10 miles.
Oh jeez, I'm sorry.
Oh well, that's the way it goes. We're talking about what's happening to these cities over there like that, and me driving 10 miles to get on the internet is not a big deal.
I know. I talked to many of them that they actually walked probably, I don't know, 100, 200 miles, and many of them barefoot. And now
We've seen that famous picture of them, of just, you know, the camera, you know, looking back, and just about as far as you can see, there's people and a little bit of livestock, and they're carrying a few items, and they're walking. And you can tell it's hot. You know, you can tell it, you know, I mean, you know good and well it was 115 degrees, you know, in August over there. And so it was a brutal time for them, no doubt.
Yes, and apparently the winters are very harsh also.
Yes.
And that's why we have such a concern for the thousands of children with no shoes. Winter is just, just around the corner. And I don't know what's going to happen. They ran from their homes. The Kurds came in, stole everything they had, and then they proceeded to bomb the city. So there's nothing left of the city. It's just rubble. And so the people had nowhere to go. Well, 10,000 of them came back, and they went up on the mountain. And others are find themselves in these camps. There's camps all over Iraq. And in one camp, they have 30,000, and they just have a little spigot to get their water out of. And they have to wait long
lines. Yeah, I saw a video. I was sent a video of that. And, that was interesting.
Yes. And there's no doctors, there's no hospitals, there's no medical, I talked with a man who has a ministry. I didn't talk with him. I talked with his chief of staff, and then him and I messaged back and forth. And I was hoping, because he says that he goes to Iraq and gives the Yazidi things, and I thought, well, hopefully they will, bring shoes or something that they could use. Because the last pictures I saw, they had given the children, little stuffed animals.
Right.
Not really something they could use.
No.
So I was trying to get through to this man, and he just had no interest. He had this attitude, well, I go there and help the Yazidis. What do you do? And it's like, are you serious? And the name of his ministry is All Things Possible. So I wrote him and I said, apparently not.
I mean, yeah, exactly.
I'm just trying to help these people get what they need, because they are the oldest culture on earth. They're the oldest religion on earth. They're a very special people. And no one has ever heard of them. No one knows who they are. And they are the sweetest, kindest people I've ever met. And the world needs more of them and less of these idiots.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's and like I said, I know that they do live in the area of, roughly where the Garden of Eden was. And we go way back in times. Mosul is present day Nineveh. And, we're all familiar with the story of Jonah and all like that. So, I mean, this is, like you say, this goes back to some of the earliest civilization, this area. And these people have hung on through thick and thin, through all sorts of you know, if you look at the history over the years of the different empires that must have swept through and all like that, it's amazing mm-hmm. that they've lived, you know,
yes.
as long as they have. So
and again, if it wasn't for that mountain saved them. I've talked to several that have told me that if it wasn't for the mountain, they would have died too, because
right.
they were ISIS. It was like a massacre. I mean, they just came in to massacre them. They just came in to kill as many as they could, and with Barzani's help. So in this day and age, how could we just sit here and not do anything about this?
And that's why we're talking about it here tonight, and also that I've written the articles, because so many people just don't know. Education's a key in so many things, and just being, you know, becoming aware, so that when you hear it on the news or when you hear you know, the president or John Kerry or somebody talk about something, you know, they're used to talking to people who are idiots. They're used to just
yes.
saying something and people just go, oh, that's nice. We're good people. We're doing lots of good, you know, and if enough people know about it, they can kind of raise the alarm a little bit and maybe something can be done about it. Cause you know, you told me a story early on that I included in an article about the man who was brought out and he was told to bow to Allah or Muhammad or whatever and like that, and he refused, knowing that they would probably be killed for not doing it. And yet instead of killing him, they put him down in a septic tank, and they left
yep,
him there all night.
Him.
And then they
yes,
drug him out. And they washed
him
off.
Out.
Yep.
Yes, and they would ask him, will you pray to Allah now? And he would say no. And then they would put him back in the tank. And they did that every night for 5 months.
Yeah, and like I said, my internet not working and having to drive to internet kind of pales in comparison to this
yes.
sort of thing. But you know, so we're not only looking at terrible things that are being done to him, but we're also looking at a terribly resilient people who are really dedicated to their you know, to their belief and to their way of life. Because I mean, it would be real easy to just go, hey, all right, hey, I'll pray to Allah, okay, you know,
yeah.
leave me alone. That's the easy way out, and that's the way most Americans would go. I can guarantee
yes.
it.
Yes,
you know,
he had such a strong love for God, and he knew who the real God is, that he would not do that.
Right. And so, you know, that to me was, you know, it was an amazing story. And then some of them have relayed stories to me about what, you know, well, like on August 3rd, about what happened and how some of them, you know, escaped. One man told me about his escape to the mountain, and another, you know, told me that, you know, he was captured and escaped. So, I mean, there's things that the stories, you know, if we could hear all the stories, it would be pretty amazing. I think it's the sort of thing that we'd like to get out there, and I do want to try to write some more articles in relation to these things and try to get it out there so that people can understand what these people face. We did have kind of some breaking news the other day, and of course, as in anything, when we broke that there was some official recognition of the Yazidi as their own indigenous people. In other words, they were not lumped in with the Kurds. They were,
right.
In other words, you guys are separate from the Kurds. And, but essentially this is sort of a first step, the way I'm understanding it, isn't it? I mean, it's a recognition that has to happen before anything else can happen. So that now that that's happened, now things seem to be on a path towards getting them some more protection and getting them maybe even a place of safety to where they can and live and not worry about that. But as is with anything else, it's operating in glue, isn't it?
Yes, and it takes time. And I've explained that to the prince. I'm work and for your audience, I after working with Elias, the advisor to the Iraq government for the Yazidi people, I worked with him for a long time, reaching out to people and trying to bring awareness. And I've been working with them for about 2 years. And about probably about 6 months ago or so, maybe a little longer, I got an email, or not an email, a private message asking me to accept a man also from Iraq. And he turns out to be the Yazidi prince. And now I've been working with him on a daily basis. And we kind of, he doesn't speak English and I don't speak Kurmanji. But he puts all my words through a
translator. It's been 6 months, Susie. What's going on?
Yeah.
you should have it down by now.
Actually, I know a couple of words.
Yeah.
But you don't want to hear them.
No, okay.
So anyway, during this time, we've been reaching out because in my past life, I was a lobbyist and I was successful. I was basically a volunteer citizen lobbyist. And so I wanted to do anything I can to help these people because I knew that they needed help. And so he and I wrote to me. His name's Prince Knife, Ben Dawood. And he wrote to me and told me that he doesn't know how to swim in the sea of politics. And I said, well, come swim with me. And so we've been swimming together for a while now. And I have been reaching out all over the internet and on phone we've contacted just about all the major nations, Russia, the United States, Israel. I even was able to get a phone number for an email address to Benjamin Netanyahu's inner office. So someone sitting right next to him, we were able to send a message that way. We were able to get hold of a person that is Vladimir Putin's right-hand man. So we've been, you know, doing this for a while, and, you know, and basically no nation can do anything because the Yazidis are in Iraq, and being in Iraq, they are under Barzani's rule because Barzani is the president, Islamic president of the Kurdish part of Iraq.
Right.
And if he is successful and gets the Kurdish state or gets Iraq for the Kurds, which they're saying it's the Kurdish state, it's going to basically turn into the Islamic state of Iraq. So I am doing everything I can to stop that, because if that goes through, and both the right and the left think it's a good idea, but they don't realize that if it goes through, all the Christians, Jews, Armenians, and Yazidi in the Nineveh Plains, which is the cradle of civilization, which is where the Yazidis are, they're all going to be killed,
right?
By Islam. So, and
right.
I was like most Americans. I was not interested whatsoever in the Middle East. I didn't have any interest whatsoever. I kind of fell into it. Well, I did fall into this, and the prince says that God sent me to him, and I believe that because
yeah.
I have learned so much from these people, and like I say, they're the sweetest people on earth, and there really needs to be more of them because they are so kind and they love each other, and I just can't explain. Well, you know some of them yourself.
Yep.
I just love them as a people, and like I say, that's rare to actually love a whole people.
Right.
Well, there's probably a couple, but that maybe aren't deserving. But that, as like I said, as a group, they are very very special and very good people. And it's just like you said, it's because of the way their religion is and their background and everything. It's just ingrained into them. The Kurds are different. The Kurds are different because they left that, you know, and they took another path. And so, it's a difficult thing. Like I said, what you do is very hard because the progress is very slow. The victories are few. But you know, if you don't do it, who will?
I know. And every time we would knock on a door, and I kept telling Prince Knife, I said, we'll just keep knocking on doors. And eventually one of them will open. And we've knocked on doors, and people would say, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. You know, good luck. And, you know, no one could do anything. So I decided to see if I could reach out to the United Nations, and I found a man who is a Supreme Justice for the United Nations, and he's put some things into a cycle that hopefully will finish giving the Yazidis their freedom.
Right.
What's happening is Barzani, because the Yazidis are in Iraq, Barzani can say, look what they're doing to my people. My people are all dying. So all people in the world give him money. So he's gotten all kinds of money, but he's only using the genocide of the Yazidi. Of course he's using it because he helped with it.
Right.
To, you know, gain financially for himself.
Yeah, it's a cash cow for him, yeah.
And the Yazidi get nothing. I mean, they absolutely get nothing. And it's just, you know.
Yeah, $2 billion would have gone a long way towards rebuilding Shingal.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
But I'm sure it bought lots of bullets and rifles and artillery, I'm sure is where it went. And possibly some Swiss bank accounts. And probably some Swiss bank accounts.
Yes, I wouldn't be at all surprised. They're so dirty.
We know the way that works. I've got a friend that worked for Border Patrol for us. He was retired, and like a lot of people were able to do, he went over to Afghanistan as a contractor, making a rather nice amount of money. To help with teach them border security and border patrol and procedures and things like that over there. And he said he witnessed multiple times huge crates of cash, $100 bills, being boxed up and shipped. And he was told to ignore it
by our
government. And he said, I can't do that. And they said, well, you have to. And he says, well, then I quit. They said, you can't quit. You have a contract. He says, well, do whatever you have to. If I have to walk home, I'll walk home. And so, I mean, thankfully there's some people with some integrity out there, but of course that didn't stop it from happening.
No,
you know?
No.
But
and I can't tell you how many times I've gotten messages from, now I'm friends with probably 40 Yazidis. And I get messages, there's a restaurant over here in this city, there's a hotel over here, they're selling the girls in front of this hotel over here. The Peshmerga, which is the Kurds, they're in a restaurant over here sitting and having dinner with ISIS. And so
right.
That happens constantly. And for the world to turn their back and just think that the Peshmerga are the good guys, they're not.
No.
They're all Islam, and they're more the extremists than anything.
Yeah.
And that's what's being hidden from the world, and it's costing the Yazidis their lives. Because of that, our country goes in, and we've got our military. They're building 5 military base, U.S. military bases in Iraq. I mean, our guys are helping train the Peshmerga, and oh my goodness,
right?
They're working with ISIS.
Yep. Yeah, and we have a long, you know, we have a long history of that, and it's a shame, you know, whether you're talking about, you know, we used to work with Bin Laden to fight the Russians.
Yes.
You know, and those sorts of things, and there's, we just have a long history of that, you know, having strange bedfellows, and then it coming back to bite us later, and the old saying of not knowing history and being doomed to repeat it is well taken, because it just happens over and over and over again. And I think maybe if the people would be a little bit better educated, I guess that's where I see my job. I'm trying to educate people, educate them about the Constitution, about our founding principles. And in this case, I'm trying to educate them about something, because this is being perpetuated, I think, partially by our government, by our tyrannical government.
Yes. Yes.
Who is doing this. And they've got some sort of an agreement for some reason over there with the Kurds, and to whatever end, I have no idea. But when you see the likes of John McCain and Lindsey Graham over there with their arms around these freedom fighters, as they call them, and you know good and well they're ISIS. You know,
yes,
but
they are.
No. These are different. These are different. You know, but then what they're trying to do is they're fighting a proxy war with Russia, and so we've got a deal going on over there. Russia wants their pipeline in Syria, and so they want to keep things the way they are. We want to Assad out of there. We're trying to overthrow him, and like I said, then the Kurds get caught in the middle of this deal, and the elitists in our government, you know, just look at that as collateral damage, I think.
Yes.
They really don't care. And that's disgusting.
Yes. I haven't seen any care. In fact, I've been talking with the State Department probably for about 3 or 4 months now. And I have a contact who accidentally gave me his direct line. So,
and it's easier to take your calls than to change his number, huh?
Yeah. And they're not even getting it. The State Department, if they're getting it, then they know what's happening. They know what's happening.
Which makes it even. Which makes it, instead of being stupid, it makes it evil.
Yes. Yes.
And to me, that's the crazy thing, is we always get that from, especially from progressives. We get the option that they're either evil or they're stupid. Now,
yes.
those aren't people I want leading me. Those aren't good options.
No, not a good business plan. They're dangerous.
Dangerous to the people over there, and the dangerous to us as well. Susie, I tell you what, I certainly appreciate you taking the time out of your evening to talk with us. It's been a pleasure, and I certainly, it's been a pleasure for me to get to know you, and God bless you in all your efforts and what you're doing there.
Thank you so much, Michael. And I thank you for everything you've done, because I can't tell you how I've been trying to get this. Well, you know, I've been trying to get their story out, and so many people shy away from it. And I don't understand why, because once you get to know these people, you want to know them more. At least I do,
right.
Because they are fascinating. They are. And when I was talking to, I reached out to the United Nations, and I was talking to the man from the United Nations, and I said, these people have been on Earth for 12,000 years. And he says, no, they've been here for over 14,000. So they're aware of them. They're aware of them.
Yeah.
And I think that's why, you know, he did what he did and signed some papers. And let's see if they do some good for these people, because
yes.
God only knows they need help.
Yes, they
and
do.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you bet. And thanks again for your time tonight. We appreciate it so much. Good night.
Okay, we'll talk soon. Good night.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, folks, that's going to be for this evening. That was a I hope that as you listen to that, you maybe do a little bit of research. Go back and read some of the articles that we've published in relation to the Yazidis. I learn more and more all the time, and these are very good people. I talked to a young man the other day. I believe he said he has, I think there's 9 children, and he's one of the older ones. I could hear children in the background when we were talking, and I asked him if he had children, and he said, well, they were his brothers and sisters. And so kind of an interesting thing to be able to talk to these people and find out, you know, how they live and what they're going through. I just can't encourage you enough to keep them in your prayers and to learn a little bit more about them. And it doesn't hurt to put some pressure on your elected representatives. I imagine maybe if a bunch of congressmen and senators started getting calls, said, hey, we're hearing about these Yazidi people over here, and there's some stuff going on with them. We need to do something about them. Nobody's asking anybody to go over there and put boots in the ground militarily and go in there and save them. But there's certainly some things that could be done that could put some pressure on the powers that be and make some changes here. And I hope that you'll educate yourself and take some time to do something like that. Become an activist. Susie, you know, like she told me, she says, I'm just a grandma. I'm on Social Security. And she's one person, but she's somebody who's taken charge and said, you know, I guess it's me. And if enough of us decided it was us, we could make quite a difference in the world. And so I encourage you to take a little time, as I discuss sometimes with my spare time. We find ourselves pretty busy in life lots of times, but when things really need to be done, we generally find the time to get it done. So I hope that you'll do that. Good night, everybody, America, and God bless.